In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's light!
Welcome to episode 11 of Green Lantern's Light, the podcast where we take a look at the Green Lantern comics that began in 1984 and continue onward. This is episode 11, we're going to be taking a look at an anniversary issue, which will actually start with Green Lantern number 199 and then continue on to the monumental Green Lantern 200. My name is Jeffrey Taylor.
My name is Michael Bradley.
I am J. David Weider.
Before we actually get into the issues, though, we actually have some feedback to go through this episode. We haven't been getting a lot of feedback from it, but we're happy to go through what we do have. First off, we want to give a shout-out to Virginia James. She not only did she leave us an iTunes review, but she gave us a great plug on her own podcast. She hosts a podcast called Talk Nerdy to Me, which it's online. It's through Spreaker.com.
I've heard of that.
That's SPREAKER.com. Just go there and search for Talk Nerdy to Me, and it'll come up. And then she also has a Buffy the Vampire podcast where she's looking at the Buffy the Vampire series one episode at a time. That show's actually kind of been on hiatus for about a month as we record this, mostly due to scheduling conflicts and whatnot, but I believe she's bringing it back pretty soon. So be sure to check out Virginia's podcast. And Virginia, thanks for the plug. We really do appreciate it. And we also got some email to go through. First up is one we got actually at the end of June, so sorry that it took us so long to get to it. But it's from William Scott Lockwood III, and he says, "Hi guys, been listening since episode 1 and just want to say love the podcast. This has motivated me to want to reread everything. Do you have a definitive list of books to get? Is everything available, or only some things?" And, William, what I would suggest is that you head on over to Mike's Amazing World of DC Comics, which you can find at mikesamazingworld.com. He lists on his site, he's got every comic book that DC has published since 1935, with exception of maybe the last, you know, month or two, if he hasn't uploaded the newest list yet. But you can look up a specific issue, and he'll show you all the places where that's been reprinted. He doesn't list foreign reprints, but for the earliest Green Lantern issues, they've been reprinted multiple times in showcase volumes, and there's a Chronicle series and other trade paperbacks. So,
yeah, showcase volumes are actually a really great way to go, especially if you're on a budget. Mm-hmm. They're relatively inexpensive. You get a whole lot. The only drawback, if you can call it a drawback, is that it's black and white. Now, I normally don't have a problem with black and white, but when it comes to Green Lantern, I can see how somebody could.
Right.
They're not that bad. It doesn't diminish that much with Green Lantern.
Good.
And we also, as far as this show goes, we always list whenever a story has been reprinted. Unfortunately, not many of the stories we've covered have been reprinted. But later on in the fall, DC is coming out with a trade paperback of the earliest issues that we covered. The first, I want to say, maybe 6 or 7 episodes of the show. I don't remember right offhand, but it's all the Len Wein issues. So, and that's going to be called Green Lantern Sector 2814, and it'll be out later this fall. So you can also check that out. And our next email, we actually just got a few days ago as we record this, and this comes from Ben Perlman, and he wrote, "Love your podcast, and I listen whenever I can. I enjoy hearing your observations and notes as it gives me a new perspective on what I read, or have to now reread. FYI, I was just listening to your coverage of issues 193, 194, and 195, and one of you mentioned, and I apologize, I don't remember who it was, but one of you mentioned that page 9 had one of the most editorial notes for a panel. If you look at Green Lantern Corps Quarterly number 4, spring 1992 cover date, you not only might find this issue gives your comment a run for its money, it has the most notes I have ever seen over 2 pages. Keep it up, and I look forward to the next episode. And I have never... I've got that issue, but I've never read it, so...
No.
I have that one as well. Is that the one with Jack T. Chance on it? Or is that number 8? If there is a number 8.
Okay. I remember Jack E. Chance.
No, this has... It looks like the Green Lantern Corps fighting a giant Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that one then.
Very bizarre cover.
All right. Well, thank you to everybody who emailed in. We really appreciate the feedback.
Yes. And we... this actually came into my email, but Sean Engel, host of Just One of the Guys, wrote and wanted to know what we all thought of Green Lantern, the animated series, if we had been watching it.
I think I watched the first 6 or 7 episodes. I have not stayed caught up on that. I do like it, just not enough that I need to watch it every single week. I'm happy to let a few episodes build up and then watch them all in a row.
Mm-hmm. I'm slowly catching up as well. I have them DVR'd, so I'm working my way through it.
I have stayed caught up mostly. There have been a few weeks where I've missed it, and I don't have a DVR, so I haven't been able to get caught up unless they rerun them, but I think it's been okay. It's not as good as Young Justice, which Young Justice is so good, I think it ruins my... viewing of Green Lantern, because it's just not as good, and my expectations are higher after seeing Young Justice. But yeah, it's okay. I've actually been enjoying the comic book version more than the TV show. I don't know if you guys are reading the comic book incarnation.
I have not. I stopped reading comics pretty like new comics at around issue 5 of the New 52. I gave it a shot. Was not as impressed as I wish I would have been, and decided to go ahead and stop for the first time since 2002. So about almost 10 years of solid collecting. I do intend to get, especially the Superman ones, sometime down the road when they're in, you know, 50-cent bins or something to that effect. But other than that, no, I've not been reading the current Green Lantern at all. In fact, the last thing that I read of Green Lantern, I kind of lost interest in the middle of Blackest Night. And I have every single issue of the crossover. Anything that it ever crossed over with, even in a minor way, I have all of those. And I decided about a year ago that I would go ahead and read Green Lantern Rebirth over again and then maybe continue on. But I didn't end up continuing on very far.
What about you, David? Have you been reading the animated comic?
No, I haven't. I haven't read any of the Green Lantern stuff. I felt like I had a good jumping off point at the end of the Flashpoint era.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it was, with the number of Green Lantern books coming out, my wallet shuddered, so I bailed.
I did get the 0 issue of the Green Lantern animated, which came out long before the series really got started. I may have gotten the first 1 or 2, but I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed it. They've just been nice done in one issues, which I really miss in modern
comics. Is often a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Superman Adventures was that it was done in one, and it was the adaptation of the animated series, and was a really good series on top of it.
Especially at the, like, till about 2/3 of the way in, then the quality started dropping off. But
no, yeah, noticeably. But most of that run is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, are we ready to move on to the first issue?
I think we are.
All right, David, you're up.
That is me. I have Green Lantern 199, cover dated April 1986, which with an on sale date of January 17th of that year. For 75 cents, you would have gotten 32 pages of story. And it is the story we're looking at is Ignition, written by Steve Englehart, penciled by Joe Staton, inked by Mark Farmer, and also Robert R. Smith, lettered by L. Lois Buhalis, and colored by Anthony Tolan.
I don't want to correct you, but there's only 22 pages of story.
Yeah.
There's 32 pages in the issue, but only 22 story.
Yeah,
pages.
I got it mixed up.
Okay.
Just cut that down.
Okay.
Sorry. The cover has Goldface in space about to lay a beatdown on Aresia with the figure of Hal Jordan reflected in his metallic hide. Do we want to comment on the cover now, or?
The only comment I have is that it was kind of neatly framed.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, Hal reflected on Goldface's back, and the top says, he's back. I thought that was clever.
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same here. I think it's a great camera angle, and the red of the logo makes it even more vivid.
I like the framing. That was pretty much the note that I had, but I dislike the actual drawing. I think Aresia looks a little bit funny. I think this one just kind of bugs me in that way, but I think a lot of the art in the issue bugged me in a kind of a similar way. But I do love the framing, and that, you know, Hal is reflected on the back of, you know, gold head's armor.
I actually have one.
I'm not
going to
call him by what his name is. I'm just going to call him Gold Something from now on. I hate this guy.
I actually have one other comment about it, but I'm going to save that till we get to the letters page, because it ties into something there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, as far as the story, we pick up on Oa following the cataclysmic events of last issue. The Guardians confirm Hal Jordan as a Green Lantern once more, and there are many congratulations for his return. But Hal honors his comrades by telling them that nothing means more to him than the Corps and his duty. The Guardian shared that of 3,600 Green Lanterns, 912 were lost and killed in the crisis. And of 36 Guardians, 14 were lost. And if a train leaves Boston at 3 p.m. going 65... Oh, wait. But the point is, their numbers are quite decimated. Now, as the Guardians are speaking, John notes this sort of somber tone and sort of those hints to the fact that the Guardians are up to something, especially when they refer to themselves as those who style ourselves the Guardians of the Universe. And they begin handing out important assignments. John and Katmer are sent to Maltus, the planet the Guardians came from, to find the man known as Appa Ali Apsa. What a name. Chip, the raccoon Green Lantern, Aresia, and Salak, this red pickle-faced Green Lantern, are assigned to track down Goldface and his accomplice, Lurlan Dupo, for the murders they committed last issue of Tomar Ree, and apparently one other person that I missed. Hal is sent to retrieve the loose plot thread of Star Sapphire from Zamaron. Now, Hal is a bit confused by the choice, but it's too early to quit again, so he does as he's told and visits his ex, Carol Ferris. And Carol Sapphire, Star Sapphire, whatever you want to call her, she's shocked that Hal got his job back after what she made him do, and she berates Hal, calling him a second-rate warrior from some senile old men who can't make up their mind. Hal makes an attempt to separate Carol from Star Sapphire, but realizes that right now one is actually an extension of the other, not separate personalities. Hal leaves, realizing that whatever he lost today is nothing compared to what he lost the day Carol turned. And as soon as Hal is gone, Star Sapphire calls out, "Sisters, it is time." Meanwhile, John and Cat Matui are cruising across space in their love ship. They talk about Hal quite a bit and how he must prove that he is reliable again. And as they get to their destination, Katma declares that she will share her sector and everything else with him as long as she lives. Once on the planet, Appa Ali Apsa is found and refuses the invitation of the Guardians to come back to Oa. Apsa explains that he was a Guardian, but Green Arrow and Hal challenged the Guardians to experience humanity as a human. So Apsa was chosen as a representative and cruised around with Hal and Ali in their hard-traveling heroes era. But when Apsa saved Hal Jordan rather than prevent a toxic waste spill, he was stripped of his Guardian status, made human, and dropped on Maltus, where he's basically been aging since his immortality is gone. Apsa basically says, deuces, starts to walk away, but John and Katma make an argument that this is a new universe that they're in, and if the Guardians are requesting him, Apsa can't claim to understand why. With that logic, Apsa decides to join them and return to Oa. In an unnamed sector, Aresia, Salak, and Chip have tracked down Goldface, and they bicker with one another. There's a brief skirmish, and then Hal joins them, and coordinates an attack that literally brings the house down on Goldface. Goldface reveals that following the defeat on the Moon of Kord, all of the villains that Guy Gardner recruited are disgruntled, and now they are hunting him as well. And in perfect timing, Star Sapphire realizes that the entire city has now been deserted, except for Guy Gardner, who tells Sapphire that he is her new partner. Dun, dun, dun.
You want to go first on this one, Jeffrey?
Sure. With my notes are a little bit sparse, but there's still plenty to talk about. By the ending, I just didn't have a whole lot to say. Page one, so the crisis is over and Hal is back. It's a good time to finally bring Hal back, although with the upcoming title change, I had wondered what his role would be and if it would happen beforehand or not. But we'll be talking more about that title change, I think, next episode. Page two, I gotta say, this splash page looks pretty awful to me, especially Hal.
Yeah,
just one person's opinion.
I think the layout of the page is fine, just the figure looks weird.
Exactly. Page four, 14 of the 36 Guardians died, and that just seems a little weird. They are hard to trust, but they're asking all the Green Lanterns to follow their orders without question and saying that they do have a reason for it, which we'll find out in the next issue. And I did wonder at this point if the Millennia thing is a precursor to the story Millennium, which will be up in about 2 years. And ultimately, I believe that it is.
I took it that way.
Yeah.
Yes, as we will find out more about next issue, more hints. Page five, dealing with Star Sapphire is an interesting test on Hal, and I do kind of like that. Plus, I've been waiting to see this happen. Finally get back to this story where Hal is dealing with Star Sapphire, and it's unfortunate that it is a bit of a letdown. Page six, so he's allowed... Hal is allowed to go to Zamaron as a quote-unquote emissary, but not as a man. Well, it's a nice way to cover that, I suppose. Page seven, here's the quote, and I just get a really big kick out of this quote. It took the imminent end of the universe to make them, meaning the Guardians, change their minds, if that's any consolation. And this is what Hal says to Star Sapphire / Carol Ferris, because she's upset that he's back being a Green Lantern again. It's like, well, if it's any consolation, it took the imminent end of the universe to make them change their minds. Pages 9 and 10. I do have to wonder, do you guys think John and Katma have had sex yet?
I took it that way.
I didn't even think
of it. I don't know. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but they do have that cozy little lounger on the ship.
They're cozy, but I don't know if they've quite gotten that far. So in their relationship, so that's why I'm curious. Pages 12 and 13. I have not read the story that's being recapped here about Ali Apsa. So this was actually a really good way to recap everything. It gave me all the stuff that I really needed to know. Although I do want to go back and read those stories now, but that's often the way on this show, I guess. Page 15. Chip needs to stop calling Aresia cutie. It's getting creepy. Page 16.
Maybe he calls everybody cutie.
Yeah, I don't care. Page 16. I find it a little difficult to see how Goldenrod can be so comfortable in a space bar. Has he been off planet before? He is a human from Earth.
Well, when you're big and yellow, you can do whatever you want.
Well, now I know. Okay, I'll have to work that into my future plans. And then so the big reveal that sort of towards the ending. So Guy has gone over to the dark side, and I was really kind of doubting that at first. But again, we'll get into that as we see more of him in Green Lantern 200. So how about Michael? What do you have?
My notes are kind of sparse as well. It's more kind of in chunks. Pages 1 to 5, the story opens with this very powerful narration. It says, there's a stillness in the sky now. There's a stillness in the stars. The crisis on Infinite Earths has passed. And suddenly, the tension, the fear, the sense of acceleration, which has grown and grown and grown, is gone. And I just want to take a Sharpie and put a little asterisk at the end of that with a footnote that says, and so are the infinite number of worlds and all the lives they contain. It strikes me as really weird that they don't mention the cost of Crisis. I mean, from just reading this, it sounds like everything turned out okay when it really, really didn't. Here, and continuing on to page 2, wasn't Tomari's final wish, in effect, that John get his ring? It just so happened that John already had a ring, so that one went to Hal?
Yes, but it was then to let Hal get his own ring back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, it's part and parcel.
Okay. And I think someone should be asking where Guy Gardner is at this point. Now, granted, there's a lot going on here, and from the flashback at the end, it seems like he and the other villains just slipped away in the commotion surrounding Tomari's death, but the Guardians gave him a ring, and he's clearly unhinged, and no one seems concerned about that. No one even seems to be thinking about him until Hal brings him up offhandedly at the end of the issue. Pages 6 to 8, well, that was anticlimactic. So much for the idea Jeffrey had that they were returning to that storyline. This feels more like a vague name check. Yeah, that happened. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But I do like Carol's costume here more than her regular Star Sapphire costume. Pages 11 to 14, I was very satisfied, too, with the scene on Maltus. I have not read the Hard Traveling Hero stuff. It is on the list, just not a high priority. But just reading these, four pages, I feel like I got a good sense of Apa Aliopsis' character and the important details we need to know of his backstory. And if I want to read more, they were kind enough to reference me to those issues, so good on them. And pages 15 to 22, not a whole lot of comments about the rest of the issue. I thought the art was really great during the fight between Goldface and the Green Lanterns. It was nice that they eventually remembered Guy, even though it should have happened much earlier. And nothing good should come from a partnership between Guy Gardner and Star Sapphire, but as we'll see next issue, it really isn't even something that matters.
Yeah.
I don't know. This was a decent issue. I guess my complaints were more nitpicks, even though they were fairly significant. But there's just not a whole lot to this issue, since it feels like a lot of setup for next issue.
It's almost entirely set up for the next issue. Yeah. So this is not one that you would want to buy on its own to read from beginning to end and expect to understand everything that's going on and be able to maybe lead into the next issue. It just isn't that kind of party right now. But the crisis is over, and this is, in a way, the beginning of a new era, but on the other hand, it's really just bringing about the ending of the old era so that they can then bring in the new era.
Right.
Because we just had a double-sized issue with issue 198, and we're about to get another one.
Yeah.
And I had one more comment. This didn't come through in David's synopsis, and I'm not blaming you for that, David, because it's very, very subtle, which is actually what I liked about it. But the stuff between Hal and Aresia in this issue was pretty cute. I know where they're going with it, and we can talk more about it in, you know, an episode or two whenever it comes up. But she's clearly crushing on him, and it's just sweet the way they're building to it so subtly.
I had that in my notes, actually, and yeah. If that's your last comment, is okay if I...
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
Because I had that note on page 3. One of the notes was, Aresia has a few kisses for Hal. I found it a little bit, and you know, as you mentioned, we're going to talk about it later, but it's a little uncomforting because she really looks much younger here than even last issue. So, but yeah, it can be cute.
She's supposed to be how old? Like 16 in real life, which is much older for her alien race.
Yeah, the alien race thing is kind of the saving grace, but I thought she was about 13.
She started, 13.
So, yeah.
So for Hal, definitely too young. However, for her alien race, that is like being over 18.
Well, we're going to see. There's some changes to that as it come along.
Oh, okay.
I'm just going to leave that there, and we'll watch it develop and kind of pace that out a little bit.
There's a bunch coming up that I've not read. Basically, between here and 1990, there's a whole bunch that I've never read.
Oh, wow. Prepare to have your mind blown.
There are one or two Green Lantern Quarterly that I've read, but that's even farther. That's still down the road to ways.
Oh, it's gonna be a fun ride. I can promise you that.
Okay.
Jumping back to page one, my notes are sparse because I found it hard. But both of these issues really to pull notes out because they, for the most part, there were cataclysmic events and big changes, but they were what they were. There was no standout moments, but on page one, I realized Oa looks a lot like Nevada. and suddenly I hear the sound of slot machines and desperation. Back on page three, I was really bothered that everybody kind of stopped what they were doing. And, I mean, we're dealing with the whole reorganized universe, all these losses. But they stopped to listen to Hal Jordan give that Bill Pullman Independence Day speech.
In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
And that threw me off a little bit, but it was a decent speech. So, page four. If you look close, John and Kat Matui, they're really putting their relationship right out there. And it may be my interpretation. So tell me what you guys think. But I know the Guardians are cool with that. But I thought that there was at least some unread implied, you know, note that discretion was probably part of that approval. Or did I just read too much into it?
I never got that from it.
Yeah, me either.
Oh. Okay, so it's just...
I could see that being an overall Green Lantern thing. Like, look, if you're going to date, you can even be open about it. But just kind of, you know, don't do it in front of everybody. That's not cool.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I never got the idea that they were supposed to try and hide it. And I think that they're just playing up that they're together, which would have been just fine to save for that scene a few pages later where they're kind of potentially post-coitus.
on your copies, is John's face like a navy blue in that third panel?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's disturbing. I jumped to page four where, yeah, we do get the first mention of Millennia. And then it's odd that Guardian sent Chip, Aresia, and Salik to go after Goldface. I mean, just at the surface, I immediately thought, oh, they're outgunned. You've got a raccoon, a child, and then whatever Salik is.
I think Chip is a chipmunk. I think that's the point.
Have you seen the footage that they released from season two of the animated series?
No.
Oh.
I've heard about it, though.
It'll put Chip in a different light for you when you see it.
Okay.
Is he a chipmunk? I thought he was...
Oh, yeah.
He's a space chipmunk.
Yeah, he's basically a chipmunk, but of an alien race, of course, not from Earth. He's got a brother named Dale.
That's not a joke.
No, that's for real.
Yeah, that's legit.
These are things actually that I learned that I had not read before, I'd read so long ago that I'd forgotten, and I relearned that from Michael Bailey while recording From Crisis to Crisis.
You're right, because I actually, looking at it now, for some reason, in my brain, put stripes on his tail, but clearly that's not the case. So I stand corrected. And thank you for not calling me out right in the middle of my synopsis. Well done.
It's, it's okay. You're entitled to be wrong.
But am I wrong that these three seem majorly outgunned?
I don't know that they're outgunned, yeah. But they are. It is a tough one for younger Green Lanterns. I think that Salak alone could handle it.
Okay. Salak was the only one that I felt was, even though he weathered enough, experienced enough to really go in and do it. But
and Chip took out a whole bar full of thugs in that one issue we looked at.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Star Wars ripoff.
I mean, from the point of view of somebody who reads Green Lantern and understands that anybody who's in the core is there for a reason, any one of them probably would have been okay. Sending all three is kind of guaranteed to get the job done, but having Salak there really does guarantee it.
So he's kind of the ace in the hole, and maybe it's more of a exposing the other two.
Gotcha.
Okay, I could live with that. Like Michael, I thought the Star Sapphire scene was so anticlimactic because on the original read, I thought, you know, we're going to come back and wrap this up. There's going to be some emotional tension. And I know we're starting something new by the end of the issue, but as a conclusion to the sort of Hal Carroll Sapphire turn of events with the Predator, it just was a withered ending. It was
almost
sort of
as bad as when the big reveal itself happened.
There you go. On page 12, my last page-by-page note, I like Ali coming back. I like the nice callback to the past when we loop it to the present. I like that level of continuity because he's more or less a forgotten character at this point, or not forgotten, but obviously sort of out of sight, out of mind. So it's like, oh, wow, good call. Good going back into that toy box. Overall, the issue was really disjointed. And as you mentioned, it's sandwiched between two really major issues. So we got a few dangling things from last issue set up for next issue. Overall, at the end of it, when I got done reading, I'm like, that happened.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Not much noteworthy in the letters column, but there was one response from Andy Helfer that kind of annoyed me. A reader writes in and says that characters like Hal and Barry Allen are passé, and he wants the new characters that have taken up those mantles to stay around. Obviously, Wally West and John Stewart. And he mentions a few other things in his letter, but Andy Helfer replies to his full letter, and he says, "Concerning Hal, we've got to disagree with you on Hal. We don't think he's stale at all. Instead, we think of him as the classic GL, the ideal model on which all others have been based." And I read that and I just think, Alan Scott? Who's that?
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I realize what they were probably getting at, but I think they could have worded it better. And that came, you know, fresh on the heels of the cover where it says the original Green Lantern, which annoyed me as well. So.
Well, I still do think of Alan Scott as a very different kind of Green Lantern.
Yes.
And when I think of Green Lantern, the first one that comes to mind for me is Hal Jordan and not Alan Scott. And he's not even the one that I grew up with. I basically grew up with Kyle Rayner.
Right.
I started collecting around Green Lantern number 48. So I got three issues of Hal going nuts and being a villain, and then I got Kyle Rayner. But I do still... Oh, sorry. But then, I do agree because I see that this is what they mean. But on the other hand, some acknowledgement of Alan Scott would have been nice.
Right, because without Alan Scott, there would be no Hal Jordan.
Right, and so you can't really call Hal the original.
Right.
At least not do that and get away with it on a podcast like this.
Right.
We're always watching.
Right.
But that's my soapbox for that issue. So if no one else has any comments, we're going to take a break and come back and talk about the double-sized Green Lantern number 200.
in a world where planets die.
I have come to the conclusion Krypton is doomed.
Did I hear him right?
Where good and evil fight a never-ending battle.
But millions of people will die.
Millions! Once again, the press underestimates me.
One man will become a hero.
Every world needs its heroes, Clark. They inspire us to be better than we are. And they protect us from the darkness that's just around the corner.
One man will rise to the challenge.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird!
It's a plane!
One man will wear spandex.
Well, one thing's for sure, nobody's gonna be looking at your face.
Mom?
Well, they don't call them tights for nothing.
Presenting The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a podcast looking at the Man of Steel's history via his earliest adventures in comics, radio, and film. Featuring reviews, commentary, creator spotlights, and more. Join the adventure at GreatKrypton.com. We are back, and we are going to be looking at the double-sized anniversary issue, Green Lantern number 200, which was released on February 20th, 1986. It had a whopping 48 pages and a cover price of $1.25. Outrageous price. Our cover is by Walt Simonson, and it shows the collected Green Lantern Corps in front of the central power battery, raising their fists, probably charging their rings and saying the oath.
They're fighting the power.
The story inside was called 5 Billion Years, and it was Steve Englehart, storyteller, Joe Staton, pencil artist, Bruce Patterson, ink artist, L. Lois Buhalis, letterer, Anthony Tallon, colorist, and Andy Helfer, editor. And because this is double-sized, Jeffrey and I are splitting the synopsis on this one, but I've got the first half, so as we begin, the Guardians mill around Oa, regretting the poor decision-making during Crisis and the loss of 14 of their brethren. They think that, despite being immortal, their time has come to an end, and the only responsible thing to do is to abdicate their self-appointed duties. After some vague threats from Sinestro and an update on the whereabouts of various Green Lanterns, we cut to Zamaron, where Guy Gardner attempts to form an alliance with Carol Ferris, a.k.a. Star Sapphire, against their common enemies. Carol gets confused when she learns that all of the Zamaronians have left the planet for unknown reasons, and a fight ensues until it is interrupted by the giant floating head of Hector Hammond, who suggests that the twosome become a threesome. Jeffrey, don't laugh. On the ship with John Stewart, Cap Matua, and Appa Iliopsa, we get some backstory recap, and then Katma tells John she suspects the Guardians are going to terminate their guardianship, which leads the two of them to wonder what that means for the future of the Corps. In space, Hal Jordan, Aresia, Salak, and Chip head back to Oa with their prisoners. Hal squeals with schoolgirl delight about being a Green Lantern again, and then decides to go on ahead so he doesn't disturb the others. As he soars through space, he passes by a small moon and thinks he sees the Flash, Barry Allen. After a short chat, his old friend seemingly vanishes, leaving behind a vision of Tomar Ri. Hal is confused, and after another chat, Tomar Ri also vanishes, leaving behind Carol Ferris. A wave of nerves rushes through Hal's body, not knowing if it's Carol or Star Sapphire, when she attacks, knocking Hal to the ground. Hal tries to return in kind, but is simultaneously attacked by Guy Gardner and the giant floating head of Hector Hammond. Despite the onslaught of the three villains, Hal summons all his will and fights back, determined not to be defeated. Saying his power has grown due to all the years using the ring, Hal unleashes an emerald explosion, taking out Hammond's head and freeing him from the villain's power. As Hammond's body falls unconscious on the island back on Earth where he was left last episode, Hal takes Guy and Star Sapphire into custody and heads back to Oa.
Several Green Lanterns return prisoners to the science cells on Oa, while Sinestro considers that with all this in motion, that the weaponers of Quard must be coming through from the antimatter universe somewhere out in space now. And they are, but they're there to attack John, Katma, and Appa Ali Apsa in their ship that's headed back to Oa. In fact, it's almost there. The weaponers manage to put some holes in their ship until John comes outside to fight them. Some of them make it inside, and Katma prepares their stand. When they attack, she knocks down a few of them before she is knocked down herself, and Appa steps forward as a guardian and demands that they stop. And they do stop for a moment until they realize that he isn't really a guardian because he's not blue. But John comes back just in time, so he and Katma can contain them. Back on Oa, even more Green Lanterns are returning with prisoners, including Salak, Chip, and Aresia. While they're putting their prisoners away, Chip sees an open door and goes to investigate, but he's pulled inside just before the door slams shut. Hal returns with his own prisoners, Guy and Star Sapphire. A guardian tells him to bring them to an important meeting with all the surviving Green Lanterns and the Guardians. And one of the Guardians in front of everybody tells a story about how they were born 10 billion years ago, and then 5 billion years ago they became immortal, and they had a problem with another Guardian named Krona 4 billion years ago, which caused them to create the Manhunters 3.5 billion years ago. But then 3 billion years ago they made the Green Lantern Corps, and 2.5 billion years ago, they lost all of their women, and they are no longer immortal at this point, so they need their women back. And it's at that point that the Zamorons enter. The Guardians explain that since they were once the Guardian women, the Zamorons think that they have evolved past them, but the Guardians don't think that that's the case. So the Zamorons demand that they fight to see which one of them is stronger. One is chosen from each side, but it turns out to be an even match. Star Sapphire demands, as their queen, that the Zamoronians stay, but they won't listen. It turns out that Appa Ali Apsa, was brought there so that he could be the one lone guardian advisor when they leave with the Zamorons. Now all the Green Lanterns will basically police themselves. And just then it turns out that the weaponers were able to sneak a yellow ring to Sinestro, who has been masquerading as one of the Guardians. So they put him back in jail, and that's literally all that happens. The end. There was no point in having Sinestro. I'm sorry,
no,
I'll talk about that. No, I agree completely.
It's like, ha ha ha, I have a ring. No, no, you don't. Bye. But that's it for the recap. How about Jaden starts
you,
this
you
one?
You didn't recap the last few pages, did you?
No, I skipped it because there's no point.
And then the Guardians leave.
And then the Guardians leave.
With the women.
With the women folk, yeah.
I take care of my women's.
You're supposed to.
Okay. The 22 little blue men take the hands of the 22 Zamoron women, and a soft green glow shot with purple circles them round like a I'm not even reading this right and a soft green glow shot with purple circles and a shot green glow with purple circles them round like a cloud, and they rise as surely as stars in their orbit, and then 5 billion years as infinitesimal, I'm not going to pronounce that right. I know how to pronounce that too. In the scheme of time, as one fleeting moment are over and done. And all the Green Lanterns look up and Hal says, wow. But this is just the beginning for those who remain behind, and the beginning of an incredible new series next month, which we will talk about afterwards.
Yay.
Yes.
David, you're up to bat.
That was hard to read that last page.
Well, it's not Ali Apsa Abba. Or whatever it is.
We should just call him AQ.
Yeah, there you go. I like starting. I mean, my notes were actually fairly sparse with this, surprisingly for a double-paged issue. But page three, Sinestro is once again threatening, and he's not in a position, which is a villain trope. But for some reason, this one elicited more of a laugh for me because he's on the planet with. It's just, I'm going to get you. And at the end, it just sort of fizzles out.
Yeah.
At page six, wow, Hector Hammer returns. Hey, remember leaving me on the beach, guys? Can we talk? I thinking about the Guardians kind of rethinking themselves, like, okay, we screwed up. Now, if you or I screw up something, maybe the rent is late. When the Guardians show up, the universe gets destroyed. I want somebody in charge who knows what they're doing. I don't want them second-guessing themselves, so I'm kind of glad that they took the high road and realized, okay, let's not destroy the universe. Let's move elsewhere, kids. Pages 10 and 11, one of my favorite scenes. Well, first part is my favorite scene. The rest of it's a little David Lynch. Out of nowhere, you know, there's this great shot of Hal flying through space, which Staten does with, you know, I could just picture this guy doing some awesome Hal flying in space shots in his sleep. But out of nowhere, Barry Allen, who is most certainly dead at this point. But at the same token, I'm glad this scene happened because that really gave Hal and Barry this chance to say goodbye in this way. So it's more closure for myself as the reader between these two because this was a really good friendship. And I'm just kind of – I'm glad that portion of the scene was there. But the rest of it was pretty useless.
You know it's not really Barry, right?
I know.
Okay.
I know, but for Hal, for me as a reader, I get to see this happen.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And for Hal, I know that's probably a good thing.
I completely agree with you on that point. It's clear that it's not actually Barry, but it's important that we do get to see that. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, when it comes down to it, it's not even that important. It's a really nice extra thing.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'll give you that to some extent. It's important to me, I guess.
I will take it as long as you're giving it.
Okay. yeah, but the rest of the David Lynch scene, by page 15, I was expecting to see the Ghost of Christmas Past. That's how many things were getting pulled out of the toy box. Page 22, with A Cubed, he makes a mention of, I'm not used to having to be brave. I kind of like that admission. It makes me like the character more because some of the stuff we see with Green Lantern, if we were to put that in a real world context, I'm not going to lie, I would be peeing my pants. I wouldn't know what to do with some of this.
And that's why we'll never have a Green Lantern ring.
That's true. But it's also him being human, which, you know, differentiating from the Guardians, he has some humility. He's fallible, but he's fallible on a scale that is much lower, as in the universe isn't going to collapse if he makes a bad decision, which really does give the Green Lanterns a lot more freedom.
Right.
To kind of have a say, which makes me feel better about the future of where we're going to be heading. Page 28, once we got to the fights, the champion of each sex, I started thinking, what kind of comic is this? Where are we going with this? I've seen several movies that begin that way, but those are off the record. Page 32, I couldn't help laughing.
I was going to say, did you download those movies? Was it part of that 40% of the internet that's porn?
I'm not going to comment any further on that. But if you need any, hit me up. Page 32, I still laugh at this. I can't even look at the page while I'm recording. When the Guardians announce that they're leaving, every face in there makes me think of the dramatic hamster. Exactly. Page 33. Now, granted, I didn't, you know, kind of some of the things I like about A Cubed are in his intrinsic to his humanity, but the excuse for making him immortal does not compute for me. Because they say, oh, he wouldn't survive the transformation. Wait, what? But he's immortal. If you're making him immortal, would that become at what point in the transformation does that become a factor?
In the part where it matters for the storytelling.
Oh, yeah, it made enough sense for a comic book.
Okay,
for me,
fair enough.
I'm with Michael on this one.
Just accept it and move on.
Well, there are times when something is set up and it's hard to accept it. And there are times when there's something that is so, you know, science fiction that you really can make up your own rules. And so the way in which these people could supposedly turn themselves into immortals, maybe it would be too hard on somebody who is already too old. I can buy into that. It's not like there are certain real world things, and it does help that they set these certain things up.
Okay. I guess it's kind of like Star Trek, where none of that, or the bulk of what we watch on Star Trek is not, it's pseudoscience at best, but they have sharpened it to the point where you can actually buy almost every bit of technology on the Enterprise because they have full-on technical manuals.
Two words: heat, vision.
Oh, touche. And finally, my final note is I like that the Guardians are leaving. They're like, oh, you're going to love the Millennium. And then they're gone. They're just dropping that hint and it's like, oh, peace.
Yeah, that kind of stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. Overall, I liked the issue, and there was a lot of bits of it I thought were really phenomenal, but they were small bits, and I don't think this had to necessarily be a double sized issue because we got a lot of filler.
Oh, I completely agree. I was going to go into that a little bit more in my notes about how things are really stretched out. This could easily have been a one-off issue. There is a lot of, I don't even want to call it filler because it mostly is well written. But in the same way, I guess I'm used to minimalist writing, at least as far as the stuff that I've been reading lately, and the stuff that I've been writing lately is trying to cram as much information into a small amount of space and do it in a way that can still flow. And here we still get the flow, but there's a ton of additional information and a ton of additional talking.
Well, yeah. And I mean,
a ton of villains that don't need to be there.
Yes.
That is well.
I like
especially Sinestro. That was so disappointing.
Boom.
I mean, that's all that happens at the end. They give him a little bit of a build-up, and then he shows up, and he says, yeah, I've been masquerading as a Guardian, because I have this ring, and ha, 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 ha. No, back to jail with you. That's all that happens.
I like what you pointed out about, you know, how comics for a long time, especially in the Silver Age, when they had 10 pages, they could compress a lot of stuff into that. And this is the opposite. This is the decompressed, where I can read a Silver Age Green Lantern story, even though it's 10 pages and I feel like I've gotten a full story here. It felt stretched out, and I thought I got the full story, yes, but I got a lot of stuff that I really didn't need.
As opposed to how they do it now, where, I mean, this was a 37, 38-page story that can take you a little while to read. There's a lot of dialogue, whereas now, you can take a 38-page story, you might still be able to read it in 10 minutes, maybe less.
Yeah. And that's
because they really try to streamline the writing, and that's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because it can make for an interesting storytelling method. But by the time you feel you're being punched in the wallet, like, I spent $3.99 on this book, and it only took me 5 minutes to read. Mm-hmm. I feel punched in the wallet at that point. I would like a little bit more in the way of dialogue. And that's one of the things that I actually talked with Jerry Ordway about when I was starting to write Slipstream.
True. And you mentioned – we mentioned earlier in the show the Showcase Presents. I would rather put my money towards one of those, even at the higher end – $16, $17 – but I'm getting 500 pages, and I feel like between that and even Marvel's Essentials, I get so much more for my money than the equivalent of modern comics, which at $3 was maybe 5-6 issues. So it's kind of the economy of space is what I'm saying. And Silver Age had that down where, yeah, we can get some really good stories decompressed, spread out, but the beats, you know, the story beats aren't necessarily as valid. They're so spread out and they're so thin.
Yeah.
Which is part of why I guess I can feel just a little bit sorry for people who do podcasts about Silver Age comic books, I mean, Golden Age is bad enough as far as the density of the storytelling, but Silver Age, it can get really dense and really intricate, and mm-hmm. there's a lot that needs to be talked about, nothing that can be skipped over in a lot of cases. And so I guess that's why with Billy Hogan, who does the Superman fan podcast, which is essentially doing the Silver Age version of what Michael is doing with the Golden Age and what Michael Bailey and I are doing with the From Crisis to Crisis era, and what Jay David is doing, you're doing with John Wilson, right?
Yeah.
Right. So Billy Hogan is doing the Silver Age version, and honestly, that is the hardest one.
Yes, because, I mean, doing a synopsis for New 52, because I do two out of the four main Superman titles, they're so fast, they're so short, where I can take, even when I was doing the Silver Age in Pad Smash, one of those simple 10-page stories, the synopsis just beat by beat, because we're trying to streamline it down to a simple, you know, point by point, would be maybe two pages, where an issue of Supergirl, even though it's a well-done book, would be maybe half a page. And that's not an exaggeration. So,
gotcha.
And what Charlie is doing with the Bronze Age.
Oh yeah.
Yes. No. I wasn't meaning to leave anybody out. I was right, just giving. Yeah. I was just throwing out a couple of examples. Charlie, who is my colorist on Slipstream. So, Michael, why don't you go next? I'll save mine for last.
I thought this was an eye-catching cover, but not much else to say about it. Turning inside, page 3, Sinestro says, "I am Sinestro, master of worlds. What have I to repent for?" Such arrogance. Far different from the campy, almost joke of a character that he's been portrayed as so far in the stories we've looked at, which admittedly haven't been many. We've only looked at maybe 2 issues with Sinestro in them, or 3 if you count this one.
Mm-hmm.
Page 9, another comment from Mauricia. "He called me honey, but doesn't even know I'm alive." Aww. Pages 10 and 11. "So, Hal thinks he sees the Flash on a random moon in outer space without a spacesuit, and it doesn't occur to him that this just might not be the Flash?" Pages 12 and 13. "It's the same with Carol. It isn't the fact that she's on a moon without a spacesuit. It's that he doesn't know if she's Carol or Star Sapphire that he's questioning." Very weird. Page 16, "And there was really no reason for Hector Hammond to be here at all, was there? Or last issue?"
No.
Page 17, and I'm surprised that David didn't bring this up. Guy tells Hal, "You were the big liberal once." Apparently Guy hasn't met Oliver Queen, if he thinks Hal is a left-winger. I mean, that was the whole point of that series, right? That Ollie was the left-winger and Hal was the right-winger?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, this wasn't a time where you could be a right-wing liberal. That doesn't really exist anymore.
Right. Pages 27 to 33. These pages can be summed up by one line with a Guardian saying, "We're old, you're old, let's shirk our duties and go have sex." Page 34 and 35. "Hey, remember the time that Carol's jealousy caused her to develop a sociopathic alternate personality, rain havoc on Coast City, and kill Jason Block?" Yeah, you'd be the only one. "And remember when Guy broke half a dozen murderous felons out of jail and then tried to kill Hal Jordan? Yeah, those were the days." I'm sorry, after his actions in the last few issues, Guy has no business having a ring at all. And they have no business sending him to Maltus, where the one remaining Guardian is going to be. And it's a really huge issue, I think, and they don't even address it. On a more positive note, what page is it? Page 36?
Although to kind of counteract that point about Guy, I will say that had we not overlooked it, we never would have seen the development of Guy into a more full-fledged character. So it's kind of that story point where, you know, you just almost have to buy it, but of course we're kind of talking from a point of view where we can look back, so your point is totally valid. Just,
but how did he go from "I hate the Guardians, I hate the Green Lanterns, I want to kill them all" to standing in line with them and proudly watching the Guardians
Yeah, I'm kind of with Michael on this one. I even had a couple of notes about it. Like, Guy should not even be part of the core if this is the way that he is. There are certain things about Guy eventually that you can get away with as a Green Lantern. This is not one of them.
True. That's valid.
Not at this point, no.
I was kind of playing devil's advocate, but there was probably a better way to still develop Guy and not have him just sort of everybody forget that he really screwed up.
On a more positive note, on page 35, one of the Guardians says, "Glory awaits you within a millennium, so Earth must be protected at all costs." And I think it'd be safe to say that they know, or at least have a vague idea where they're going with the storyline at this point. But do you think they had the name picked out already, or is that just a happy accident?
Ooh, good question.
I do not know. My honest assumption is that they had picked out the name. I do know about that story. There's a little bit of backstory about the lead-up to it that I am aware of, but I'm going to save that for a later time. I can tell you guys off-air if you want. But there is a chance that they may have had at least some of the basics already set up, and they probably did already have the title.
And page 36, yeah, Sinestro had no point being in this book.
None whatsoever.
That's all I had. It felt like I said before we started recording, it felt like these two issues could have been one double-sized issue or maybe two regular-sized issues. This one just had a lot of padding, like the stuff with Hector Hammond and Sinestro, and a lot of time spent explaining characters' backstories, which, if you were reading the book, you already knew. I think the basic story of the two issues is fine, but there was just a lot of stuff that just felt like filler and didn't need to be there.
I think that this story did suffer from a lot of filler. It also had a lot of stuff to recap. And even more than that, it still had a couple of loose ends that needed to be tied up, like right. Hector Hammond. And I don't know if Steve Englehart would write the same way as Len Wein, where he would set something up and then say, oh, well, I guess I have to deal with that, and then write something that has to do with that, or how much of it was really set up ahead of time. But Hector Hammond seemed to have been left there for a reason on that beach. And then ultimately, it's like, well, I guess we have to do something with him.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the same way with Sinestro here. They set something up, then they have to do something with it, and if what they have to do with it doesn't really fit into what the direction that they're going with the issue, if they still have to do it, then they have to find a way to do it. And when you have 38 pages to work with, you might as well just throw it all in, take the shotgun approach.
Yeah. So that's all I had. What do you got, Jeffrey?
Well, right off the bat, the cover. I really like this cover. It's more or less monotone. We have a lot of green, a lot of yellow, and a lot of red. And I think that that does make for a really good, just the colors that are chosen make a really, really good image. Walt Simonson did a great job with this. The people in the background do look a little bit like they're just drawn as stick figures, and I don't really see a problem with that because that's the style here, and I dig the style. On page 3, you know, we haven't seen much of Sinestro in this run or even the previous run. When was the other time that he showed up? I know that we'd covered his first appearance, and then he was around one other time. When was that?
There was his first appearance, and then the issue last episode where they set up him being on Oa.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah.
For Sinestro. I like that he's not being overused, but he's not being used at all, and he's really horribly used in this issue. It's interesting right now, I thought anyway, that the yellow ring is gone. As far as the Guardians are concerned, the yellow ring just isn't around at all anymore. Of course, we find out later on in the issue that it is still around, even though it doesn't do him any good. And I'm not worried about them killing Sinestro. This Guardian is like making this not veiled threat, like, well, we might just have to kill you. I'm not worried about that. Page 5, we get a really weird note. It's on the bottom left from the editor, Andy Helfer. And there's this reference that Guy Gardner says, you know, the green power will beat your purple blasts now the same way it did when Hal Jordan used it on you. And then we get a note from Andy Helfer that says, when Hal was Green Lantern, of course. No, really? Is that what you mean? Like, we do get some useful notes, but then we get that one. And I'm just thinking, why would that even be thrown in? But anyway, I digress. That was just a complaint about minutia. Page 6. I really don't get why Guy is acting this way. I know he's upset, but this is grounds for getting kicked out of the Corps. And he allies himself with not only Star Sapphire, but Hector Hammond? Come on, he's allying himself with villains. And so why would he still keep the ring after this? You don't get to do that.
Yeah.
Page 9. By now, yeah, this was, it was around this point that I realized some of these pages are really more drawn out than they need to be for the oversized issue. And specifically on page 9, this was a weak way to get Hal away from these three so that he could then have the next couple of pages with Barry and then Tomar Ree, which would turn out to be Star Sapphire and Guy Gardner and Hector Hammond. It just seemed really strange that he's like, well, I'm just going to go on ahead so that I don't bother you. No. Page 10, I am really liking the art here on page 10. It's a little bit like funny to see it because we see three different shots of Hal Jordan all in the same panel. So it is just kind of a little bit weird, but it's really good art, and I appreciate that. Weird pages with dead people. That's all I can really say about the next couple of pages. The next couple, I don't even have page numbers. I just have, okay, the big fight with Hal. Between Hal and Hector and Star Sapphire and Guy Gardner. It bugs me too much that Guy is with the bad guys. Otherwise, I would enjoy this fight. Because other than that, it's actually a really good fight. It's probably the best fight of the issue.
Are you bugged by the fact that he's with the bad guys or that they never resolved? Or that by the end of the issue, he seemingly is standing with the Corps?
Again. It bugs me. No, it bugs me that he's with the bad guys when he does not have a good reason to be that upset with Hal. I understand that he's upset with Hal, but not enough to like go and kill him just because he got the ring instead of Guy.
Okay.
And that's the thing that he's upset about.
Right.
And you know, if anybody has a reason to be upset, it's John for being the alternate to the alternate, which nobody has pointed out once again.
Yeah, and well, he's had the ring now for a little while, so I guess. But you can try and say that, well, that's just the way that Guy Gardner is, but no, that it's too much for him. It makes him a villain. He's not a good guy here. And he's going to be a good guy again sometime before too long, but right now he is a villain allying himself with villains in order to take down a hero for BS reasons. But otherwise, I would have enjoyed this fight because it probably is the best one. But the one that I thought was the best one was the next fight with John and Cap Matui and the Quardians. This was a cool fight. But page 22, John and Katma put all of the weaponers into a force field after the battle is over. But I just want to point out, you know, next time, try that first. Page 23, there is a mention, and I thought this was really cool. There's a mention of whatever that thing is in the desert that led Hal around a few issues back. Apparently, the Guardians actually went and tried to talk to whatever this desert thing was to try and get some, not information, but a little bit of guidance to see if the desert thing agreed with them. But it's cool that we get a mention of that.
The talking sand?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, right there in panel 3. Yes, I have seen to the seeding of the desert. The sands agree it is best.
Yep.
Well, if they're consulting sand on the best course of action, yeah, it's probably different than
that. It's no different than our world leaders today. Mm-hmm. Page 28, Owen women are Zamorons. Wow. Has that ever been talked about before?
I think this is the first time it was brought up.
I assumed so. And that's a pretty big reveal. And the Zamorron Guardian fight is just weird and wonky. That's the only thing that I can say about this fight. It turns out that their powers are about evenly matched, and so they have not evolved as much as they thought that they had, and they're equally powerful. But the fight itself just looks weird and doesn't really... It gets the job done, but it's just not a very good visual. That's all I can really say about that. Page 35... This was a really drawn-out explanation, but yes, this is when it became clear that this was leading up to the story of Millennium, which will be out in 1988. So we've got this worth of storytelling to lead up to that. And my last note is on page 36, oh my god, that's all we get of Sinestro's escape? Lame!
I agree.
Alright, but that's it for my notes on issue 200.
All right, I had a question I thought of while y'all were doing your notes. If the Zamaronians and the Guardians were, or are, the same race, same species, whatever you want to say, why are the Guardians short and blue while the Zamaronians are tall, leggy, white-skinned?
2.5 billion years of evolution?
That's dumb.
Girls mature faster?
The idea is actually kind of lame, because if they are immortal, I assume that means that they're also not aging. Otherwise, they would age quite a bit differently. They are blue, and the Zamarons look like normal human women. So the evolution thing really would only apply if they were having offspring, which is not happening here.
Yeah, that's the whole point of going away, so they can...
Right.
Do the wild thing and have a new...
And even if they had their own individual mutations that just applied over that 2.5 million year or 3.5 billion year period, they still wouldn't all have the exact same ones. So it's a little bit too far-fetched, a little bit too much to say that they look different, unless... When it comes to the race that the Guardians and the Zamarons are from, that the men just look different from the women, which is the only thing that I can really think to apply to it.
Okay.
Don't look at me. I don't have anything to add to that. And I.
And you're not short and blue or tall and leggy, so...
Or how do you know?
Okay, moving on. There's nothing really of note in the letters column. There's quite a lengthy editorial from Andy Helfer talking about how everything that Steve Englehart has done since he came on the title has led to this, blah, 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 and how there's a big change next issue, blah, 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 but nothing really worth talking about much. As for other appearances, really not that many in the 2 months that we covered this episode. Hal had a cameo and a flashback and Justice League of America number 249 in a guest appearance and 250, the latter of which was also an anniversary issue. The Green Man is still in Omega Man with issues 37 and 38. And for Who's Who in the DC Universe, we had issues 14 and 15, which included profiles of Major Disaster and the Manhunters. So that's it. Next episode, it's the beginning of a brand new era as we look at Green Lantern Corps, issues 201, 202, and 203. But until then, this is Michael Bradley.
I'm J. David Weider.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we'll talk to you later. Thanks for listening to another episode of Green Lantern's Light, hosted by Michael Bradley,
Jeffrey Taylor,
and J. David Weider. Show notes, past episodes, and other information about the show can be found at greenlanternslight.com. You can also subscribe to the show directly via the RSS feed and on iTunes.
If you'd like to get in touch with the show, drop us a line to greenlanternpodcast@gmail.com or use the contact form at the website. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter to get updates and interact with us directly. Let us know your thoughts, and we might even read your message on a future episode.
Green Lantern and all related elements are copyright DC Comics. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and that you'll come back next month. But until then,
in brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape our sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware our power.
Green Lantern's light.
La 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 la